Welcome. You're listening to Heart of Iowa. We have a live broadcast with Donna and Lana, who are presenting a food show for... This is the second time you guys have been on the air together, but I think this is going to be a permanent relationship we're going to have, ladies, with you coming in and talking about food.
We're good friends.
They're very good friends. They're going to be talking about recipes and food and anything that they are interested in talking about. So I'll let them... This is Lana and Donna. Let them talk about food.
Well, here we go. Welcome to the Donna Lana Kitchen. Donna Lana Kitchen talks about food. Donna Lana Kitchen talks recipes. Donna Lana Kitchen talks about a whole lot of other things, too. On KHOI Radio.
Bravo,
welcome,
Lana.
Welcome. We needed some sort of intro, and that sort of was going around in my head. So that seems a good start. My name's Lana. Lana Noctigal, and this is...
Donna Priskintas.
Donna, why don't you tell folks a little bit about who we are and what's going to happen today?
Well, Donna and Lana, which the coincidence is that we... It's D-O-N-N-A and L-O-N-N-A, as if our mothers had planned this many, many years ago. So it's the Donna-Lana Kitchen. And we both live in Ames, and Lana is going to have to tell about herself because she has a myriad of talents, besides singing, obviously. And I am a professional chef, sort of semi-retired in Ames. I have worked for a long time promoting organic and local foods and fresh and seasonal, and it's wonderful that that's all the rage now. But I have to tell you, I'm old enough. I've been doing this for about 35 years. So,
So you started when you were, what, five?
Oh, thank you, darling. anyway, we're crazy about eating, and Lana and I have a friendship based on that. So Lana is going to tell you about herself.
My name is Lana Noctigal. We decided to call this show the Donna Lana Kitchen because our last names are way too unwieldy. It would be the Priskintas Noctigal Show, and it just doesn't roll off the tongue. So think of us as
Yeah,
the
we
Donna
don't know how to
kitchen.
Spell that. It's
Nobody knows. Nobody knows. But that's who I am. Anyway, my name is Lana Noctigal. I'm a pretty much longtime resident of Ames. Always lived in the Midwest here and there. I've been in Ames for about 30 years. I have a small vegetable farm on the northwest edge of Ames and grow vegetables, and I am also an artist, and I do music, too. So I grow food, draw pictures, sing and dance, and like Donna said, I like to eat. So what we're going to talk about today is something very seasonal. Happy New Year, everybody. We're going to be talking about party food and party drinks and traditions of the new year. And we'll get into some other stuff later. So I'll turn the show over back to Donna because she knows all about party food.
So recipes, ladies. Let's...
We were going to start off with a very traditional, traditional Iowa food, popcorn. And kind of ways to dress it up. I had three recipes that I was...
You like popcorn, Donna?
Of course. Of course. How could you not like popcorn? So, of course, I never buy the kind that comes in the little pack that you put in the microwave or anything like that or pre-seasoned. So, you know, I just buy the loose... local popcorn, Iowa popcorn. And I have a hot air popper is what I like to use. It's really very simple. You plug it in and it just kind of, you know, heats up and spits out the popcorn into the bowl. The other fun thing, if you really want to get crazy and you have young kids, is you spread a blanket on the floor, you put the popcorn popper in the middle of it, and you leave the top off. And the popcorn, like, erupts like Vesuvius all over. So that's for if you're really brave. Anyway, so I pop a lot of popcorn, and then I flavor it. The easiest ways are by melting the seasoning in the butter that you're going to pour all over it. So the first recipe I was going to mention is a curried coconut popcorn.
Ooh.
Right. So I buy the large, not the small flaked, but the fat flakes of coconut.
Okay.
And for that recipe, I mixed with the butter, I also mixed some coconut oil, which comes in a jar and is hardened kind of. So, you know, you kind of scoop it out. So you're mixing kind of maybe half butter and half coconut oil. And then I put in that one, I believe, I should have written this down, cashews and, no, it wasn't raisins. Well, I put the curry powder in the oil. Oh, I know what it was. It was dried, you know, this dried banana flakes, dried dehydrated slices.
Banana chips.
Yeah, banana chips. So it was banana chips, the fat coconut, and then you put the curry powder in the butter and oil mix. But now you don't put the coconut and the banana chips in the butter. You just make the butter, melt the butter, coconut oil mix. You put the curry powder.
So that's a flavor transfer.
Yes. So you've got the flavored butter, and then in the popcorn, which comes out of the hot air popper, just neutral, then you mix your butter, your banana chips, and your coconut, and toss them all together. And then you can, you know, if you want it spicy like curry, you can add either cayenne, or if your curry is hot, or black pepper. And, of course, you have to adjust the salt. So that's the banana one.
Is there, because there's a lot of different types of curry. Is there,
yeah.
Are there any that you would suggest?
I usually just, there's, where is it? Oh, the Frontier Natural Herbs makes one that they sell at Wheatsfield. That's just their kind of bulk curry. You know, curry is ubiquitous, and I think, you know, whatever one you like, it really doesn't matter.
So it could be Thai curry or something.
Absolutely.
What if it's a paste curry, like the kind that it's already...
In the Thai chili flavor stuff? Mm-hmm. Yeah, whatever you want to do to melt into the butter, that's what's going to spread your flavor throughout.
So like if you wanted to make it really hot and do a green curry.
Absolutely.
And then it would be Thai green curry.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I mean, it's infinitely variable to suit yourselves, you know.
Uh-huh.
And who you want to blow out of the water with it. So the other kind of popcorn that is really easy to make is a garlic popcorn.
Oh, yeah.
So you just make, like, garlic butter. And I put, I think just mixed party nuts is what I used. You know, like the party mix that you buy. I'm not a huge fan of peanuts in it, but that's just me.
Well, they add a different...
Exactly.
Yeah, different flavor to it.
Right. So just that. So garlic butter and mixed nuts into your popcorn. That makes a whole nother flavor. And then the third flavor was, this one is a little more elaborate. You have to melt some chocolate, like chocolate chips. I use dark chocolate in a double boiler. And then you drizzle it over the popcorn.
Ooh.
So you're getting, and I would go ahead.
Pretty, actually.
Yeah, it is. And, I put salt and pepper anyway in it. Pepper, too. I like pepper with my chocolates. And then I also dropped, those freeze-dried cherries.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You can either crunch them up so they're kind of little speckles, or you can put them in whole. And then that one has to go on a baking sheet in the oven while the chocolate melts a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So then you end up with a chocolate kind of sweet, tart flavor. So I highly recommend for party food popcorns because, A, they're easy to make, they're easy to serve, and everybody loves popcorn.
And they're inexpensive.
Absolutely. Well, you can rack it up by putting the nuts in.
Oh, well.
You know, that ratchets up the cost. But it's also really popular. And if you make too much, you can reheat them in the oven the next day and just keep on eating them. So.
Well, if they go, you know, I don't know if you have birds that you'd feed curried popcorn to.
My squirrels will eat anything, I'll tell you that. But I think these are easy and familiar. Uh-huh. And yet... The seasoning, if you change it up enough and kind of make it individual, makes it kind of extraordinary and also personalizes it. You know, if you like hot, spicy stuff, it's good. And if you know
people that like it, it's like a party gift too.
Yes,
of your house.
True. Just like caramel popcorn which is another kind of popcorn you can also make. But I think, it's easy, it's fast, and it's a do ahead. Thing, which for parties is really, really important. And then, of course, you can create your own flavors. So, party on, dude.
popcorn sounds like a wonderful idea. It's one of my favorites. There's also, this is a wonderful season also for things to imbibe, if nothing else, just to cheer in the new year and to drive the cold winter away. So do you have any advice for some things to go with that popcorn that would be in a glass, perchance?
Well, people like to do punches on New Year's, and one reason for that is you're not sitting around mixing drinks all evening. You just make a big bowl of it and put it out. And, of course, the thing with party punches is you, as you're planning your party, you're going to have to gauge how much liquor you put in the punch. You know, the tradition, when I was growing up, punches were always like fruit juice, bubbly water, and then the vodka, right? So you're not gauging. I mean, you can put in less vodka if people don't want to drink and drive, or if it's a long evening, you can, you know, put in a little more and taper off later. And the festive presentation, and I think this is very traditional, you just take like a butt pan or a mold ring, and you cut up fruit slices with your, you know, and make a big ice mold.
Oh, yeah, and then that floats in with the fruit, and it melts. And
exactly. Instead of having ice cubes, so you have this kind of decorative shape with, fruits floating around in it. So I did read...
I've seen people, I shouldn't say people, because I've actually never seen it in real life, but like images of those 1960s cookbooks where they take ice cream and they float it in a punch, and as it melts, it becomes like a big frothy thing on top.
Yes, I think the tradition was sorbets.
Sorbets, yes.
Or, sherberts.
Sherberts.
Sherberts, sorry.
Yeah, they sherberts. Would take just like a sherbert, and then it would turn into a big foamy... Interesting,
mess. Yeah.
Yeah, mess. On top of your liquor.
Sounds good. If you want to do something a little different than the traditional ones with vodka or even with champagne or bubblies, I read one recently that sounds pretty intense. So I, in fact, usually when I read a recipe, somehow in my mind I'll be able to follow along where their flavor's going. This one I had to actually make it myself to taste it because I couldn't even imagine it, and it was really good. It's something from Bon Appetit, and it's called the Long Hello. So the ingredients are 1 3/4 cups of Calvados or of other brandy. Now Calvados is a traditional French Norman. It's pretty hard, you know. It's not low alcohol. It's pretty intense brandy. And then 1 cup of Saint Germain, which is elderflower liqueur. Now that adds a sort of a sweet, bright, it's not really floral, but it's a nice, delicate flavor. And then 10 dashes of bitters, like Angostura or something. So now you're putting the bitters in, and then you mix that with champagne.
Pardon me, what is a bitters in 25 words or less?
Ooh, bitters. Well, it usually only has a tiny bit of alcohol, and that's just to preserve it. It's usually an herbal concoction. They're very popular in cocktails. Oops.
Got a phone call, but
okay. You want to agree?
Is it plant-based or sugar-based?
It's plant-based.
Okay.
And yeah, it good. Is bitter.
Okay.
When it's also considered digestive. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you're...
If you have I was reading about it, it's bitters are used to strengthen your liver because a real sugary carbohydrate diet actually makes your liver soft. So the action of having a bitter is to stress your liver but also make it stronger.
Well, a lot of aperitivos.
Yes.
Or aperitifs that you drink before dinner will often have bitters in them because it's supposed to stimulate the appetite or probably stimulate the bile, as I would say.
Yeah, there's a lot of combinations that go
on. And it's also, it's very good for kind of settling your stomach as well. So Angostura is the most common one that you can find in any grocery store, and it works quite well. So
And it is very bitter.
It is. So, you don't drink it straight. Like even if you're going to just drink it for the medicinal properties, you still have to mix it with water
or
juice, bubbly
or something.
Water,
yeah.
Something like that.
So it'll cut the sweet out.
Yes, it does. It cuts it down a lot. So this one had the Calvados, the Saint-Germain, 10 dashes of bitters, and then champagne. And then it says, this part really blew me away, when you serve it, you're supposed to grate some fresh nutmeg on top. And I was kind of going, ugh. But then when I tried it, it was fabulous. It really, really was. So that's a very exotic punch, but I'm quoting this one to you so you realize that you can make a punch out of almost anything that you want, and it's like mixing the popcorns, you know, you tailor it to what your either favorite cocktail is, or, you know,
layer the flavors.
Yeah, and go ahead and mix and match. And when you're creating your punch, I would suggest maybe making a tiny quantity first, you know, in case, oops, that flavor didn't work. Or, but I think punch, the universal idea is, you know, something that's ready mix that people can help themselves. It's often in a punch bowl, though it could be in a pitcher. But with a punch bowl, it is nice to have that visual floating ice ring in it or something like that. So we were also going to talk a little bit about champagne, Lana,
champagne,
right?
Yes.
Champagne, because this is traditional drink.
Yes. It's probably something that some of us don't even think about until it turns into the holidays and we need something to kind of toast with. The toasting in the New Year is a good thing. So can you suggest some champagnes for a good way to start the year?
Well, it's, you know, the bubbles. Everybody likes the bubbles, right? They just feel good going down.
So there's champagne and then there's sparkling wine. Because champagne is traditionally from that one region in France.
Yes, it is. It's tightly controlled. For example, if you have a champagne from a California champagne, it must be labeled. And there are champagne police, people who actually go around reading the labels to make sure if you're selling California champagne, that the word California is actually printed in the same size as champagne, so that people know they're getting California champagne as opposed to champagne. Now, some other things I did want to suggest for bubbly are the Prosecco, which is the kind of Italian version of bubbly, and Cava, which is the Spanish version of bubbly. These are getting, you can find them a lot more readily now. And I think they're great beverages in and of themselves. Plus, they're usually, for the quality of the beverage, a lot less expensive than champagnes.
So yes, you can get some really nice, high-quality champagne without the cost of the French version.
Absolutely. And you can, yeah, well, no, you can't call them champagnes. You can get bubbly.
You can get
call
bubbly.
Them bubbly.
A sparkling wine.
Yeah.
Sparkling wine.
It's a bubbly. And also there's Blanc de Blanc, which is a white, you know, most of the punches that have champagne in them, you can substitute Cava, you can substitute Prosecco, and they all come. Champagnes shouldn't be too sweet, although some people have a sweeter palate and like, what's the Spanish, no, the Italian one, Asti Spumante is very sweet, bubbly, and they're all kind of interchangeable.
Brut
for champagnes means dry, and then extra brut means it's more dry, and then demi-sec means half dry, which means it's a little sweeter. So they kind of go in that range.
That's the nomenclature then.
Exactly. For champagnes. I would encourage people to try both Cavas and Proseccos. Run right up, get some for this.
I'm so proud of myself that I'm learning to pronounce Prosecco. These things you learn as you get older, and I feel so much more older and wiser.
Well, it's really a good... It's a good word to learn.
It's a great word. It's a great word.
But drink and drive responsibly, folks, because a life you could save could be your own or someone you love.
Drink and enjoy each other in moderation.
Yeah. Moderation. Yeah.
My plan is to drink early in the party and then taper off.
That's a good thing to do. I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this is the Donna Lana Kitchen on KHOI Radio. We're talking about food. We've been talking about Happy New Year's food, party food, popcorn, punch, champagne. And one nice thing about those kind of foods is that they create a centerpiece, a bowl, a common bowl, something to share. Another tradition is the wassail bowl, which is an old tradition of going door. It's trick or treat for adults, really. I mean, it's going around. I like researching and discovering new tunes and new songs. Well, actually, they're very old songs because the old songs and the old tunes are surprisingly about farming, food, community, ritual,
pleasure.
Pleasure. And you can learn a lot by the history of the old songs, by the words of the old songs. I have a book that I enjoy this time of the year. It's called the Christmas Revels Songbook. The Christmas Revels is a bunch of people got together in the Boston area about 70 years ago and started to research and re-sing and enjoy and explore the golden oldies of the holiday season. And I'm talking golden oldies like from the medieval era. These are songs, traditions from like the 15th, 16th, 17th century. Things were cold and bleak back then, but my goodness, people did celebrate, especially the solstice and when Christmas came around. And to heck with just this being this one day of Christmas, we go all the way through to the 12th night. This is a whole area, a whole big area of celebrating. And so the Christmas Revels has a wonderful collection about the wassail, and I'll read a little bit for you. The word wassail, that's spelled W-A-S-S-A-I-L, comes from the Anglo-Saxon West Hall, meaning to be whole, a greeting for good health. The wassailers traveled from house to house singing with a wassail cup, which their hosts were expected to fill. And one nice thing about the wassail tradition, it's kind of like caroling with a drinking cup along. Just in this small collection, it seems like a lot of different communities and a lot of different areas had their own wassail. They, some of them talk about wassail, wassail, all over the town. Our bread is white and our ale is brown. Our bowl, it is made of the white maple tree. Okay? And another one says wassail, wassail all over the town. Our cup is white and the ale, it is brown. The cup, it is made of the good ashen tree, and so is the malt of the best barley. Aha. And there's even a Kentucky wassail because the same people moved to the southern Appalachia areas, and these kind of Scottish and English songs do the same thing here. And their wassail song has got the line, our cup is white and our ale is brown. The cup, it is made from the old oak tree. And our ale, it comes from Kentucky. So it's joy be to you and a jolly wassail. It's lovely. And then there's one here that says it's even older. And it's called the apple tree wassail. Cider was a very big deal in this country, but in Europe too. Apples are wonderful things.
Hard
cider. And talking to people in central Iowa, this was a lovely year for apples and tree fruit. People have tree fruit and apples up the kazoo. So here's a little thing to the apple tree. The apple tree wassail was performed at night by firelight. It ensured new growth in the fruit trees. The singing and dancing around the apple tree was punctuated with loud banging noises and shouts to drive away evil spirits. And dancing around trees and waking up spirits and ensuring a good harvest also originates the word carol, Christmas carol. The word carol actually referred originally to not just singing, but holding hands and dancing around a tree. So the carol usually has a dance with it, too. The apple tree wassail goes like this, just the first verse. Old apple tree will wassail thee, and hoping thou will bear. The Lord does know where we shall be in another merry year. To blow well and to bear well and to merry let us be. Let every man drink up his cup. Here's health to the old apple tree. And at the end of the song, everyone shouts, capfuls, hatfuls, basketfuls, bushelfuls, barrels full, barn floors full, and a little heap under the stairs. Let's play a version of the Wassail song. This is the Gloucester Wassail. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen, KHOI Radio. We're talking about holiday food today. What you just heard was the Gloucester Wassail, a wonderful New Year's drinking song, visiting friends song, celebrating the harvest song, hoping for a New Year's song. My name is Lana, and
Donna.
We are the Lana Donna Kitchen. We have been talking about holiday party food.
For tonight?
Yeah, for tonight. And whenever you feel in a holiday mood, of course. Let's see. Other things to say about some old holiday traditions. I alluded to a book called The Christmas Revels Songbook, which celebrates the golden oldies, as in the 15th, 16th, 17th century. People got together and ate and danced and enjoyed to drive the cold winter away, and celebrated not just Christmas, but days before and on into the 12th night. After all, there are 12 days of Christmas. One interesting, odd little bit here I want to share with you is There is a celebration traditionally on December 26th in Wales called the King Killing, or the Killing of the Wren. Things were pretty tooth and claw back then. This is a really strange sort of celebration here. This is it's a tradition. This is a carol from Pembrokeshire, South Wales, commemorating the ritual king killing of the wren on St. Stephen's Day, which is December 26th. Again, it's a caroling or the going to house tradition. Generally, young boys would do this. The killing of the king is, honest to goodness, it started out, you'd find a wren and you'd kill it. Real sporting, but it sort of fits in with sort
young,
of sporting,
young boys,
young boys doing things. But it has a lot to do with death, rebirth. The dying of the old year, the coming of the new, the losing of the sun, the coming back. And funny how that kind of works into our Christian traditions, too. The dying and the resurrection again. The idea of the king being seen, the king bird, which they'd honor as the king, but he's made to rise again. And the carol would celebrate that as the little boys went around. The carol goes like this: joy, health, love, and peace be here, all there is. By your leave, we will sing concerning our king. Old Christmas is past. Twelfth night is at last, and we bid you adieu. Great joy to the new. Okay, that's lovely. So think about wrens and such.
I'm trying to imagine wren pie or something.
I know.
It was a harsh winter.
A harsh winter.
And so get us some of those birds in the field to eat.
Right. It's really fun to find these old words, these old songs, because this is the stuff that people sang to keep warm. It's nice to know these things.
Trapping of birds was a very important part of European peasant diets.
Especially when you weren't supposed to eat the king's deer.
The king's big birds, or the pheasants, or the bigger things.
No, we're not supposed to eat that.
Yeah, the little birds.
You could be killed for that.
Mm-hmm. Poaching. Doesn't have just to do with eggs, you know.
Let's move on to another little bit of our Lana Donna Kitchen Show and explore a recipe. When Donna and I got together earlier in the holiday season, we were discussing Christmas traditions and Christmas cookies and holiday things like that. And I mentioned pfeffernusse, which is a...
Not only did she mention it, she made some and brought them. They were really good.
They were lovely. They're a little... it's a little spice cookie, and because they're small and spicy, and
about an inch in diameter.
They're a nice holiday cookie that you can eat by the handful, and they come from my tradition.
German.
This is my thought of them. These are small little cookies. They're about the size of quarters when they're baked. So you can eat them by the handful with tea or strong coffee. My family made a lot of these cookies during the Christmas holidays. And this recipe is a combination of both my grandmother's recipe and a recipe for pfeffernusse from my Aunt Ramona.
Spell pfeffernusse, please.
Pfeffernusse. Don't look for pfeffernusse in an index under F. It starts with a P. The pfeffernusse is spelled P-F-E-F-F-E-R-N-U with some dots above it, S-S-E.
And pfeffer, I think, is German for pepper.
Pepper.
So it means pepper cookie.
Pepper cookie.
Or a highly spiced cookie.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. My grandmother's recipe was made to feed an army. So I halved that recipe. She also, I'll read the recipe here, but her recipe called for half lard, half butter. You can, and my recipe calls for two eggs. You can take the, use less eggs and a little more flour, and it makes a harder last a long time kind of cookies. These cookies freeze well and they store well. It makes kind of a harder, crunchy cookie, sort of like a Lutheran biscotti. And it's just
yummy.
Yeah, it is. It's just
a Lutheran biscotti.
Yeah. And these little cookies, what size of a nickel or a quarter, they're just about the right size to balance on a spoon and dip into your cup of tea or coffee. So they're lovely and they're great to share. The recipe goes like this, at least my recipe. Half cup sugar, half cup molasses, half cup butter, 2 eggs, 1.5 teaspoons of cinnamon. And then here's the rest of some things you can put in. So a quarter teaspoon of all or some of ground black pepper, nutmeg, ground cloves, allspice, and cardamom. Be generous with these spices. And this is important, too. 3 to 4 drops of anise oil. I think my grandmother's recipe started with mainly anise oil and cinnamon in her recipe, but I like to add more stuff. And then also 2 teaspoons baking soda, pinch of salt, 3/4 cups nuts chopped, and 2 cups flour. Mix all that together, and you make a roll out of it. It's a refrigerator cookie. Put that roll in a refrigerator uncovered overnight, and then the next day slice the cookies off, bake at 375 degrees Fahrenheit for about 8 to 10 minutes, watch your oven, and cool them, and they
have some keeping power.
They have some keeping
power. Now, I think we're going to post this recipe, right, on the KHOI website, so you guys can get the more exacting details if you want to replicate them. Now, when Lana gave them to me, with our cup of tea, when I first tasted them, I went, oh, this is the same as my grandmother's recipe. Different texture, though. My grandmother, Baumgartner, also German tradition. This is the only cookie she made all the time, not just at Christmas. And hers was same flavors, but it was a softer, more cookie-sized, like 2.5 inches across. And then she just put like a, you know, white sugar icing on them. So they're kind of a darkish brown. And then they had the white icing on it, but it's the same combinations of flavors, very, very spice oriented. And, so when I ate Lana's cookies, I like was immediately transported into my childhood. But Lana also brought another cookie with her.
Oh, it did, didn't
that
I?
Just knocked my socks off. This one I had never thought of by myself. Odd combination in my brain, but boy, was it delicious. She calls it a lemon cumin cookie. You want to talk about that one, Lana?
Yes. I got this recipe, from my recipe box. Heaven knows where this came from, but here it goes. You wouldn't think cumin and lemon would go together. These are a very buttery white cookie.
But almost like a sugar cookie
almost
base,
like a sugar
kind
cookie.
Of. Yeah. Thin, crisp.
Here's a quick recipe, not quick recipe, but here is the recipe for lemon cumin cookies. 1.5 cups sugar, 9 tablespoons butter, 2 egg yolks, zest of 2 lemons, and juice of 1 lemon, sort of 4 tablespoons worth. 2 teaspoons of cumin. Be generous with the cumin.
That's quite a lot.
It is. It really, but the lemon cuts into this.
Mm-hmm.
2.5 cups.
Now, that's, were those whole seeds or?
Ground cumin.
Oh, okay.
Thanks. And 2.5 cups flour, 1 teaspoon baking soda, cream, butter, and sugar. Beat in the egg yolks, lemon zest, lemon juice, and cumin. Sift flour and baking soda and fold into the above ingredients. Place dough on a cookie sheet of parchment paper and shape into a log. Again, these are refrigerator cookies.
Mm.
And put the logs wrapped up in the freezer overnight. And they can sit there for a while. You don't have to do them right away. But when you're ready to bake, take them out of the freezer. Set oven to 325 degrees Fahrenheit. Line cookie sheets with parchment. Slice thin and bake for 10 minutes. Cookies spread while they bake, so don't put them too close together. And careful, cookies can get too brown too fast. Watch your oven for the first batch. Cool on wire rack. And then take them over to Donna's house and eat them. Yes. That's it.
Now were they, do you actually slice them while they're frozen? Or you kind of let them temper a little at room temperature?
You
don't want them to be too soft because you...
Right. No, it's good to slice them when they're still firm.
Pretty cold.
Because they're very, very buttery. and go ahead and slice them and thin and put them out. So
I use dental floss. It actually works really good.
Good idea.
Instead of a knife, your knife will get dirty. So if you have dental floss, it'll cut right through it. It's like a string, but stronger.
Thank you, Cynthia. Good idea.
Obviously, a cheese wire would also work for that.
Cheese wire, see, huh?
Ah,
this even is stronger, yeah.
Anyway, the lemon kuma cookies, and like you said, the pfeffernusse are anytime cookies, really, and they're kind of a nice addition to a holiday platter of cookies, which tend to be kind of sugary and Christmassy and maybe over too chocolatey. You know, never too much chocolate, but these are nice things
these
to put
around.
These are a
spice cookie that are crunchy.
Yeah, yes. What I like about the lemon cumin, though, is it helps you. Obviously, you could use the same base and put any kind of flavors in it. And I think that the lemon cumin cookie is a really good example of being creative with flavor, and which is something I would encourage anybody to, you know, not just follow recipes, but kind of begin to make your own. You would do it by taking the base of the cookie recipe and then adding, you know, if you're, you could make them a cinnamon cookie using three cinnamons if you wanted to, for example, Ceylon cinnamon, Vietnamese cinnamon. I mean, there are just lots of, you know, flavor, and changing flavors is how you take a traditional recipe or you make your own kind of mark on it. And that is the creative part of cooking.
So like if you had a chocolate cookie and you added, say, cayenne to it.
That would be a real surprise. In fact, I often, with chocolate, I often add a little coffee flavor, pepper. I tend to put a black pepper in almost any kind of fruit or sweet thing. You don't necessarily taste it when you go, oh, this is pepper, but it's in there as another kind of base note to the flavor. So I'm big on deepening the flavors and adding.
I've had your fudge, I know.
You know, that brings us to another book that Lana and I were exploring. It's called The New Midwestern Table by Amy Thielen, T-H-I-E-L-E-N. It's the subtitle is 200 Heartland Recipes. So this is a fairly new book, and one of the reasons we were kind of excited about it is it's really Midwestern oriented, and it brings us back to the place where we really appreciate the cuisine that we grew up with, the familiar flavors, and she does it very artfully.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I appreciated this recipe book because not only is it fun to go through and see all the beautiful pictures, but she starts with ingredients that I know about. The meats, start with a pound of smelt. I mean, I can deal with that. That's good. Or corn. Just do this thing with corn or cheese. And she has a wonderful way of flavoring this, and she's a woman that understands butter.
Yes, and flavor as well. Apparently, she grew up in Minnesota, went and cooked in New York City with some of the very well-known chefs there, and then returned to Minnesota to kind of celebrate what is her real, you know, her homeland. So each of us have tried a couple of recipes from the book. One of the ones that I did at my solstice party dinner was, it's a herring recipe. So I just I played, of course, a little bit with her recipe. But the idea is herring, apples, sour cream, horseradish, and lemon zest. So you take the herring packed in wine sauce that you buy at the grocery store. You strain the vinegar off of it. And then you add sour cream, horseradish, lemon zest, and a lot of apple slices, probably almost as much apple as herring, pretty close, you know, cut up. And, fresh onions as well. Now, in her version, she picked out the pickled onions, but I like to leave them in. So that was a really good switch up on the traditional herring and sour cream, and everybody loved it. Then Lana cooked. Tell the duck stories, Lana.
Oh, duck stories. I happened on a duck. I was privy to a
A duck harvest.
A duck harvest. And I got a duck.
Not wild ducks.
These are ducks. Actually, these were...
barnyard ducks.
These are barnyard ducks. And these were runner ducks, the kind that stand up and run around on their butt. They look like little penguins. They're lovely things. And they're sweet, yes. But, oh, my goodness, they taste good. Now, these were older ducks, so I had a... I didn't know.
Older being two years.
They're over 2 years. And Donna said, oh, my goodness, that duck's going to be tough. And for me, I don't think I've cooked more than one or... two other ducks in my lifetime, so I don't know for ducks. So I asked Donna, and she gave me some advice, and then this recipe book.
The advice was mostly save the fat. That's the best part.
That's the best advice. The new Midwestern Table has a poultry section, and it had a duck and rice recipe. And this is a steaming, keep all the juices in, very, very slow cook recipe.
Which was perfect for the old duck.
Which worked out fine. She had wonderful... example, and she talked me through in very well written paragraph how to break the thing apart in its parts. It's kind of like a chicken, yeah. A duck is a bit firmer and definitely oilier than a chicken, though. Pan fried it, cooked it, covered in a water and dark beer.
Ooh.
Broth. So the dark beer. Oh, of course, enough dark beer for the duck, a little sip for me. That was good. and then that cooked for an hour. Slow.
Roasting.
And a nice tight. And with her advice, do not look. Keep the cover on because you don't want to lose any juice. Okay. So by the time an hour is up, to open that up. And I'm preparing some stir-fried onions and celery and everything else, and some rice. Open it up, and the duck looks pretty good. Open it up. It smells wonderful. There's all these fantastic juices. Take the duck pieces out, pour in the rice and some other sautéed vegetables.
What kind of rice?
I used half and half jasmine rice and half... a wild rice mix. She calls for wild rice, and I think I love wild rice, but not the whole blasted thing in wild rice. So I mix it up a little bit. And she called for mushrooms. I happen to have some local dried mushrooms. I had the morels. That's what you had. That's what you did when they showed up in last spring. I've dried some and put them in my freezer. Those went in there along with onions and some other stuff. And you'll have to check the recipe for the spices. Put that in. Put the ducks back on top. Close it up. Cook it for another hour, and it was really good. Anyway, this is a really good cookbook.
So that's 2 hours of cooking for the old duck.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, perfect. Perfect. Well, I'm going to read one more recipe from her book that I think would be another good thing for tonight's party table. It's called Old Fashioned Pounded Cheese with Walnuts and Port Syrup. This is the text that she has with it. Pounded cheese can be found in books of early American cookery from all areas of this country, but when made with aged Wisconsin cheddar, it's really a treat. The recipe is basically a deconstructed cheese ball. You simply whip softened chunks of potent aged cheddar with butter until silky smooth. Top with broken toasted walnuts and drizzle with the port syrup. Not much more difficult than unwrapping a square of cheddar. The success of this simple spread depends on the quality of the cheese you use. The older and more velvety it is, the more distinctive the spread will be. The old recipes for pounded cheeses call for beating the cheese in a bowl with a spoon, wooden spoon, until soft, but I use a food processor because it results in a super luscious whipped texture. Before beginning, make sure the cheese is at room temperature and the butter is a touch colder. It should have the consistency of putty, not rock hard, but firmer than mayonnaise, what a French chef would call beurre pommade. This can be served with bread, but I think it's actually best with crackers. So the instructions are to make the port syrup, combine the port and brown sugar in a small saucepan over medium-high heat. So that's a half a cup of port and 1 tablespoon of packed light brown sugar. Not much sugar. Simmer gently until reduced to a light syrup. It will start to throw bubbles, bigger bubbles, and should be consistent, the consistency of maple syrup. This is why I think she's a good recipe writer. Start to throw bigger bubbles. Throw. that really makes sense. Good writing here. She says about 3 minutes, let it cool to room temperature. Okay, then you break the cheddar cheese. So that's 7 ounces of aged cheddar at room temperature into chunks and drop them into the food processor. Process until pureed. Add the butter, which is 6 tablespoons, 3/4 of a stick. So that's quite a bit of butter. Salted butter, cool but not cold. So it says add the butter, mustard, which is 1 teaspoon of Dijon, black pepper, 1/4 teaspoon of black pepper, and cayenne, a pinch of cayenne, and then you process it, stopping often to scrape down the sides until whipped and smooth. Then you transfer the cheese to a shallow dish, break up the walnut halves, and drop them on top, and drizzle with the port syrup. The note is, the pounded cheese can be made a few hours ahead and kept at room temperature, or it can be made the day before and kept in the refrigerator. Just be sure to bring it back to room temperature before garnishing with the port syrup and the nuts. That sounds really yummy. So that's from The New Midwestern Table by Amy Thielen. I'm sure we'll be quoting from this book frequently. It's a fairly new book. We love it.
Andy. I believe the Ames Pub Book Library has a copy of it also.
All right.
Good.
If not, they should get it and tell them too.
Yes.
Midwestern Table.
The
New Midwestern Table.
Great. Mm-hmm. Great. So we are the Donna Lana Kitchen.
And Happy New Year to all of you.
Yes. We'd encourage you to email us here at the radio station. That's khoifm.org. We'll have
cooking questions.
Cooking questions and suggestions, opinions, advice.
Yeah, if you like the show, let them know. They need feedback.
And food events, too. We'll be attending local food events and creating some ourselves.
You brought some fudge, Donna, and had cranberries and nuts and stuff. I mean, do you want to talk about that?
Well, we did our last show on the fudge. We had a lot of fudge for Christmas. We put the fudge recipe on the internet, right?
If not, I will put it on with all this other stuff. But you also have there's a gentleman coming about the wild fermentation.
Yes, there are some upcoming events, and actually, I think we should call them uprising events. That kind of goes along with the bread and yeast. So some uprising events coming later this month of January. The Practical Farmers of Iowa, for one, is having their annual meeting. And Donna, tell them who the special guest of the evening is.
Sander Katz is coming for the PFI event, and also he's going to be, I think, at Wheatsfield, and I also think he's going to be at ISU. The Ag Arts Organization is bringing him in. His book is called The Art of Fermentation. We're going to have an in-depth show about these books, and he's kind of the national American authority on different kinds of fermentations, which would be, of course, yogurts and pickled vegetables and beers and
chocolate, tea. It's surprising.
You mean like kombucha then?
Yeah. But it's surprising the things that are fermented before we can digest them, enjoy them. And people are learning how to do it again. There's a lot of things that can be just done on a countertop. I'm kind of figuring out some of this stuff myself, and we'll be talking about that.
That will be an upcoming show shortly before he's in town, so with plenty of notice so everybody can catch him live if they want to. We're also...
Do you know when that is? Do you know when the...
It's towards the end of January.
That's pretty good. The end of January, sort of. We'll let you know.
Yeah.
You can check out ISU's calendar of events or call Wheatfields, or contact us here at khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. Or stop by the station at 410 Douglas here in Ames, Iowa.
It'll also be on the Practical Farmers of Iowa website, too. So we have some upcoming plans for you. I think our next show is probably going to be about New Year's resolutions. New Year's resolutions, and particularly the kind that you make that are dietary in nature, kind of post-feasting. What else, Lana?
Oh, let's see. You mentioned some interesting Japanese sort of things.
Oh, right. We're probably going to have Tomoko Ogawa on the show talking about part of the dietary things are Japanese food in general, unless you're eating tempura, tends to be very light and healthy and nourishing, which is what you're always looking for in the beginning of New Year's. So we're going to talk about those kinds of things. It'll kind of be the fasting aspect of the feasting that we've been talking about for the last two shows. So we look forward to talking with you again.
Yes, and for the new year, instead of just wishing each other peace, joy, and all that good stuff, we can roll up our sleeves and actually do it to one another. So let's do each other some peace, love, and goodwill. Let's go out with
the carol again. Okay, we're actually going to go out with the Heart of Iowa theme song, but you can tune into this show again at 7 p.m. this evening and also on Thursday at noon and 7 p.m. But their next showing is going to be next week on Tuesday at noon, and it'll be live here at the KHY studios. Happy holidays, folks.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Mm-hmm.